sky's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Welcome to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is Thursday, the 17th of April, 2014. Offering myself at the lotus feet of our Lord Sai, this is Karuna from Team Radio Sai. Good morning, dear listeners, once again. Thank you so very much for joining us on this bright and beautiful Thursday morning. The time in the ashram is 41 minutes past 9 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and current weather conditions here, 29 degrees Celsius right now with clear sunny skies and an expected high of 40 degrees later in the afternoon. We are expecting overnight low of 27 Celsius. Today we have lined up two brand new interviews. One is a Triswit Divinity conversation with Rita and Robert Danielli of the USA. The second interview is a Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories interview with Ms. Lina Berdaloy Barua of Assam. Lina is an alumna of the Sai University's Anandpur campus. Both interviews are two-part interviews, and today we'll debut for you the first part of each one of these. And without any further delay, I thought we'll just start off Morning Glory with the first interview, which is the one with the Danielli's that we recorded shortly after Christmas 2013. And here it is for your inspiration and your enjoyment right after these important messages.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Shri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970, when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and, of course, tiny little rosebuds, which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger. Mm-hmm. And just like a movie or a video, mm-hmm. right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love All, Serve All, we've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock, because we put it on millions and millions of t-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, Love All, Serve All, we put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Trust with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Thursday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Trust with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org, or you can also download and listen to any interview of your choice in this series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/trist, that is radiosai.org/TRYST or trist. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to Trist with Divinity, Radio Sai interviews with individuals whose lives have been touched and transformed by the love of Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba. Today's episode is quite extraordinary, for it's not every day that we have a couple from America who have known and learned of Sai glory from the pioneer American devotees. Our guests today are Rita and Robert Danielli. Rita Danielli has been a devotee of Baba since 1968. Swami came into her life at the age of 13 years. She began to work in the Sri Sathya Sai Baba International Book Center of America when she was barely 16 years old. Her first trip to India was in 1974, and she traveled here with Mrs. Elsie Coven. It was during this trip that Swami told her about her future husband, Robert Danielli. Rita's academic credentials are impeccable. She received her bachelor's degree and teaching credential and was an educator for 15 years when Swami told her to return to school to receive her master's degree in counseling psychology and her marriage and family counseling license. She was a marriage and family therapist for several years when Swami told her to return to graduate school again to receive a dual master's degree as a school psychologist and school counselor. Upon completion, Swami told her to take up a position at the Santa Ana High School as a high school counselor. Rita, along with Elsie Coven and her mother, Frances Reeves, started the first Sri Sathya Sai Baba Center of Tustin in 1974. Rita and her husband Robert still serve at the Sathya Sai Baba Book Center of America. Rita's husband, Robert Danielli of California, was raised a Catholic. In the 1970s, he was moved by the book Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramhamsa Yogananda, and he joined the Self-Realization Fellowship. In 1973, Robert became a member of the Sri Sathya Sai Center of San Juan, Capistrano, California. Influenced by the likes of Mrs. Elsie Coven, Miss Indra Devi, and Dr. Jack Hislop, Robert made his first trip to India in 1976. The following year, Baba arranged his marriage to Rita, and a year later, that is in 1978, he performed it. A member of the Sathya Sai Book Center of America since 1977, Robert is a trustee of the Sathya Sai Society of America. Robert has degrees in teaching and business administration and works in the real estate business. Sai Ram Rita and Sai Ram Robert, and a very warm welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you, Sai Ram.
Now, Rita, let's begin with you. Your journey to Baba is connected to that of Elsie and Walter Coven. You were a young girl, barely 13 years old, when you came into the Sai fold, and the Covens played an important part in your journey. In a sense, you represent a link between the early years of the Sai movement in America and the current. Stepping back, and this question is for both of you actually, stepping back, how do you view the growth of the Sai movement in the world's most powerful and wealthy democracy? And how relevant is the Sai message to the West?
It started in the late 60s when people began to search, and there were people who had been searching for a master for some time. And I consider them really the early disciples of Sai in the West. These were people like Dr. Jack Hislop, who came in the 60s, Elsie Coven and Walter Coven, who came in the 60s.
Indra Devi.
Indra Devi, who came in the 60s from her yoga institute in Tecate, Mexico. Don Heath, Richard and Janet Bach, who made films.
That's right.
To spread in the West so that people could see Swami and listen to Swami. So these were the early people that started. And then we didn't know what to do in the West. We didn't know what a bhajan was. We didn't know what an altar was. We didn't know how to pray. And then the first Indians started coming as professors at the universities. So a few of them started to come and help us learn the history, the culture, and spirituality of India. And then the doctors and engineers came. And then the computer people came. So our good brothers from India really helped our organization in the West grow, because service to them was natural. Service to a Westerner was not natural. So that's how it grew.
And when you look back today where we are, you're talking about 1960.
50-some years.
Yeah, so 50-some years later, half a century later, how do you see the Sai movement today in the West, especially in the USA?
It is mostly Indian, the people who do the work. There are many Westerners, and they learn from the leadership of some of the Indians who come and know how to put together a medical camp, know how to put together a feeding, know that you should go out at night and pass blankets around to the people living on the streets. So they have really helped us learn. There are many Westerners who have taken positions of responsibility in the organization and who have melted right in to the theme of service to mankind.
I see. Robert, in this context, talking of posterity, extending this movement forward, we have this very vibrant SSC movement, children who are learning the values and they're going to be the future leaders of the Sai movement. Now, in that, demographically speaking, we don't see too many Native Americans or Westerners.
The Bhavikas program started with three people, Bernice Mead's two children.
and Bernice herself?
And one other child.
Okay.
And it grew. And as the Indian family started to move in as professors and doctors and engineers and computer scientists, they filled those classrooms because they were hungry for a place for their children to go once a week to learn about Swami and the human values.
I see. Well, as a couple, both of you, Rita and Robert, you represent a very rare breed of Westerners who have gone through an arranged marriage. We often hear the expression, marriages are made in heaven, and yours was truly made by your heavenly father. Now, wasn't it a cultural shock for the two of you? You spoke about it in your speech, on your Christmas Day speech in the Kulwant Hall.
You know, oddly enough, it might have been, but with Swami's grace, it was not. When I was a little girl, I never knew whether I would get married. But I knew that it would take a very special person to be able to be married to me. Because God was very important in my life, and God came first. And I really felt that it would take an unusual person, and that only God could pick my husband, because I was sure I wouldn't make the right choice. So I had prayed to God long ago that if He wanted me to marry, He would have to choose my husband.
And then somebody was listening, somebody was really paying attention.
Yeah, and he told us right from the beginning.
Well, that was one of the best pieces of advice that Swami gave us when He married us. But He said, first understanding, then adjustment. Without understanding, there can be no adjustment. And with understanding, adjustment is automatic. But what I've come to realize about that advice is that it really serves as a pole star, as a compass that guides me true north, because it's not just two people, like you would sit down in a counseling session, both people insisting that the other one understand their point of view. As I look back over these 36 years, I really have come to understand that it's a deepening of your own understanding of what you bring to your experience and what's happening. And it is your job to try to understand the other person, and so that you reach out in love so that other person can reach back to you. It's not so easy, but it is something you work on every day. And I truly think the only way you can work on it successfully is with God's grace and asking Him in prayer in your heart to think through you and to speak through you and to feel through you and to ask His guidance. Because the ego is so strong and it's so stubborn and it's so subtle that it really takes God's grace to soften that so that you can hear what the other one is saying. And then when you've heard the other one, you can find softer, sweeter, kinder words to express what you feel so that both of you can meet on an even ground.
Oh, that's really amazing perspective and advice, very practical. And it sounds easy when you say it. I guess it's not so easy when one practices it. Because ego does drive all of us crazy at some point in time.
We have spent many 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock nights sitting with our pajamas on, holding hands, looking in each other's eyes, trying to reach understanding. And that's what it takes.
In front of Swami's picture.
Yes.
In front of Swami's picture.
Because I think the ego is so subtle that it wants to be right. And it's not about being right. It's about finding understanding. And we can't possibly know what the other person thinks. Everybody comes from such a diverse background. They have such a diversity in their experiences, what they think, what they believe, the way they've been raised, that only Swami can give you that openness in your heart to really listen to what the other one is saying and consider it and not need to be right.
Yeah, why do we have this compulsion to be right? That happens in all relationships, and you've been a marriage therapist, a couple counselor, Rita. That, again, I'm guessing, is only from the ego, the need to always be right. No, it's my way or the highway.
You know, I think the way I work in counseling now, because I'm still a counselor, I work at a high school as a counselor. I've really come to see counseling in a very different spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I think traditional therapy and counseling has some very good roots and very good ideas. But I think for counseling to be successful, it has to be based in spirituality. It has to have something deeper. Because I see that so often therapeutic principles come from the mind, and the mind doesn't heal. The heart is what heals. But it can't be a mushy heart. It can't be something that's soft and weak. Love is strong, and it's intelligent, and it's kind. And it takes a lot of practice. And you have to be willing to ask God to think through you, not only to share your thoughts, but also to hear through you, to hear the other's thoughts. And I think whenever I sit down with a parent or a student or a family, I always see God in the room, and I ask Swami to speak through the people that I'm with and to speak through me, and to ask them what God needs in my mind and in my heart, not so they hear it, because it doesn't matter to them. It only matters they're trying to get out their point of view, that they're able to say what is on their heart. And so the goal is really for Swami to bring to the table what it is they need to hear. And so I find one of the most important things is to help people find understanding and to use values, because religion, you're always going to find differences. You're always going to have a right versus wrong. And life is much more than right versus wrong. It's a deepening of awareness. That was one of the first things Swami ever said to us. He said, what is life?
Mm-hmm.
He said, life is awareness. And the more I go on with Swami, the more I'm with Swami, the more I realize his truth only becomes more true through the years, because it's a deepening process. And it's like a beautiful rose petal, the petals unfolding. You see how truth is so true in a way that you couldn't have understood 20 years ago, because your consciousness evolves and changes, and you have this deepening process, and you see aspects of Swami's truth that you couldn't have seen before, and he deepens you so that you can see those things, and he pulls these pieces together. So we have to pray. We have to pray that God guides us, so that we're not guided by our ego, but that we're guided by the Spirit. And that is what Swami's left us with. In leaving his physical form, he is giving us this opportunity to push us to his Spirit, to his essence, which is always with us. It's that ever-present help that's available.
Beautifully said. Would you care to add to it, Robert?
No, it's beautiful. Yes, one of the things I learned early on from Swami was in working in the organization, and especially the Sai Book Center. And I learned a great lesson there, because whatever Swami gives you to do, once the job becomes more important than the opportunity that the job gives for love, you've missed it, and Swami is not happy with it.
And this is where Swami's truth only becomes more truth, where he deepens your understanding, where he gives you first understanding and then he gives you adjustment. And I prayed about that, and it took me 20 years to begin to understand that. And it wasn't until years that I began to understand, and what he was teaching us was a gift. It was grace. He was teaching us how to live our life. This is where we make the great mistake. We think we know what to do. And the more we love Swami, and we say Sai Ram, and we say his name, the more we get fooled into thinking we're doing the right thing. And we don't know who's really driving the chariot. It may not be Krishna. And so our job is to, with every decision, with every choice we make, that we never take for granted that we know the right thing to do. That inwardly we check and we say, Swami, thy will, not my will. And we ask him. We ask him what the right thing. We never make the assumption that we know what the correct decision is, and that we, because we think we're so devoted, and we've been a devotee for so many years, and we chant Gayatri, and we sing bhajans, and we do seva, and we do all these things, we get lulled into thinking we're devotees. But a real devotee is someone who asks God first, what is the right thing to do? And this was very important to me, because I really felt I had I very much relied on my intuitive faculty to guide me. Practice, Swami, think through me. Swami, speak through me. Swami, feel through me. never forget, never take for granted. It's like a good marriage. Every day, you never take for granted. When you get up in the morning, you just, as we greet our elders and our the people around us, we say Sairam, we greet our beloved, we greet our family, we say good morning. We're polite, we have good manners, we treat the people we live with the dignity and the respect that we would a perfect stranger. Very often we give strangers more respect. And so this is just an opportunity to always take the time to ask Swami, Thy will, not my will, what do you want me to do? Sometimes we think we know what the answer is.
Yes, and the thing I learned from that was that the work that Swami provides for us to do in His name mm-hmm. is only a vehicle for us to give love.
Beautifully said. Yes.
For us to give yes. love.
Now, if I may backtrack, we spoke about a good marriage and what it takes to make one function. Now, you've been in your marriage, your arranged marriage has thrived and survived with God's grace 36 yes. years. What advice would you give youngsters about considering arranged marriage as a possible viable alternative?
Well, that's a tough question because I don't think there's one set answer. But I think the most important thing is two things. First of all, to pray to Swami, mm-hmm. to pray to God that if He chooses marriage, that He guides you. And secondly, if you have marriage, that you pray together every day and you don't make decisions without prayer. And prayer is saying God's name and asking for His direction. And to be humble enough to realize that you don't know the answer, but He does.
But everybody will not have God personally pick their life partner. In yeah. your case, Swami acted like your grandmother who chatted with Elsie Coven about Robert. And, you know, they went over all the details. They did a reference check together.
Yes. yes.
And after that, he proposed his name to you. So everyone won't have such a blessing. Your parents play the part. The elders in your family play the part. And even in India, with the increase in Western influence, a lot of people are at a crossroads where they think that arranged marriage is a very archaic idea. And it is very unlikely to work. At the same time, self-arranged marriages don't particularly have a higher rate of success,
yes.
as we see. So what you spoke about what makes a marriage work, that applies to both arranged and self-arranged marriages.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Both involve work, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Absolutely. First understanding, then adjustment.
Mm-hmm. There's no easy ways there.
There's no. And I think it's like once someone once said, a repetition is the mother of skill. You have to practice. You have to practice speaking kindly. You have to practice good manners. You have to practice all the things that you want in a marriage, you have to bring to a marriage. And whether it's arranged or it's not, you have to bring to the marriage what you want out of that marriage. You have to, it's the golden rule.
Be the change you want to see around you.
Yes, as Gandhi said.
Mm. Now, Robert, you were joking in the Saikulwant Hall when you said that you learned your first lesson in surrender when your wife, your future wife, relayed to you the message that Baba wanted her to get married to you. But on a more serious note, what do you understand by practicing surrender to God? Some people think the idea of surrender is rather defeatist and it's very weakening. It's like giving in to a cult or an external force. How do you see it and how do you practice surrender?
Well, for me, it was, I'd lived 35 years in the world, trying to be successful in the world and live by the world's values. When I started with self-realization in reading Yogananda's work and then reading Swami's work, it changed for me, and especially Swami's words that the spiritual life is easier than the worldly life. He said, it's very easy. You put God first in all your thoughts, words, and deeds. You put others second in your thoughts, words, and deeds. And you put yourself last in the thoughts, words, and deeds. And these words rang strong to me when I was considering what my future wife, Rita, had just presented to me. And for me, that meant I have to put God first. So Swami has told me, you marry this young lady. And then I have to put her second. That was a big stumbling block because I'd been in the world where you have to, you know, fight for yourself, fend for yourself. You push yourself forward, lift your own bootstraps up, mm-hmm. and put yourself last. So that was the thoughts that were going through. And if I said yes to this, which I was going to say anyway. I at least had to deal with it mentally, that I had to put God first and my wife second and me last.
And, okay, let's just go to your profession. You're a realtor. You're in the real estate business.
Yes.
When you're dealing with your clients, you have to make a sale or execute a sale, and your commissions are what determine your livelihood. How do you go about putting God first, then obviously your client second and yourself third? It would impact your livelihood.
Yes. My family has always been in real estate. My grandfather was a real estate man, buying and selling property. My father was a real estate man, and our two daughters are real estate brokers currently. My goal was to serve my clients, and my mantra was I would never encourage my client to buy a property that I would not buy myself. Mm-hmm. So with that kind of a guideline, it was very easy for me to focus on what was good for me would be good for them, regardless of the commission. And the commissions came because it was kind of a selfless act.
And you must have a lot of repeat business, referrals?
The ones that know I went to India twice a year stayed with me. Especially I'm in commercial real estate,
so the
men that I dealt with are very rich people. And usually at their beck and call to have a broker or accountant or a lawyer rush to their office. But the ones that stayed with me knew that for Guru Purnima, my wife and I would come here for several weeks. And for Christmas, my wife and I would come here. And the ones that stayed accepted that.
So they became lifelong clients. Now, Robert and Rita, when you go down memory lane, I'm sure the two of you have amazing, plentiful, beautiful memories of Baba's love. And would you care to share some of them with us and also how they transformed you as individuals?
When I first heard about Sai Baba, I had been following Paramahansa Yogananda, going to his temple in Encinitas, California, doing the long meditations and the exercises and this and that, getting ready to have my Kriya initiation. But then I heard about this center close by in San Juan Capistrano that was run out of the house of Robert and Bazzani.
Barbara Bazzani.
Robert and Barbara Bazzani. And so I started attending. There was only four or five people there, and we sang bhajans, and we didn't sing bhajans. We played Richard and Janet Bach's learning tape, and they would sing, and we would follow.
Well, like karaoke of sorts.
It was karaoke, yes. So anyway, they told wonderful stories about their first trip with Don Heath from the San Francisco Center, and they met Ananda Moima and Swami and embraced them all and this and that. So immediately I went to India, and for 3 months Swami was building the hostel in Whitefield, and so he only came out on Thursdays and Sundays, which was difficult because we lived in Indra Devi's house in Whitefield with no cook, no cleaning, nothing, and going there every day and maybe getting a glimpse of Swami walking to inspect the site. 3 months. And the groups were small that would come on Thursday and Sunday. So I had plenty of opportunity to Swami talk to me, but he didn't say a word. He didn't look at me. So we traveled with him to Hyderabad and to Delhi and to Madras. And on the end of the 3rd month, I was traveling with a group to follow Swami to Madras. And these small airplanes, Swami would sit in the back. If the entrance to the plane was in the back, he would sit in the back, would be the last one on and the first one off. If it was in the entry was in the front, he would sit in the front. Well, this plane, we had been there 4 or 5 days with Swami, and we were flying home, and I got the last seat on the aisle, and Swami was across from me.
Mm.
And I thought, my God, I've been here 3 months. He hasn't said a word to me. And I'm really frustrated. He's spoken, called Westerners in for several interviews over this 3 month period, but not even a look. So I said, Swami, thank you. I appreciate what you're doing. I respect you, but I'm going home and going back to Yogananda. I enjoy the temple, and I'll have my Jesus with my family, and I'll have Yogananda on weekends. Thank you. I'm finished.
Did you think of it in your heart?
Or? Think about it in my heart. And then, as I said that, and I had made the decision to leave, Swami was reading the book that they have in the little pamphlet, and he opened the book and turned the page to me, and the title of the article was The Great Composer.
Oh,
I was furious. I said, that you're just not going to play with me any longer. I'm going home. So Swami gets up to get out first. He walks past me without a look and goes past me into the little hallway near the exit. And then he comes back and he turns around and he looks right into my eyes and he says, "Are you coming?" And that is the prayer I would say at the end of my meditations with Paramahansa Yogananda. We would meditate for long periods.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go deeper and deeper, and I would feel in my mind, "I'm coming, I'm coming, I'm coming." And this is the word that Swami echoed in my face at the last moment before I lost him. He always had me, but I was going to lose him and go home.
My God.
So that's,
are you coming?
Are you coming? The same prayer I'd made for years with Paramahansa.
So those three words did it for you.
Those three words.
So, no conflict between Kriya Yoga, Mahavatar Babaji, Yogananda, Paramhamsa Yogananda,
Swarji, and all of them.
And Jesus the Christ.
Yeah, Babaji and the whole bunch. He'd captured me at that moment.
Robert, if someone asked you did you switch gears or did you change paths by being born into the Christian Catholic faith and then going through the Yogananda phase and aspiring to be a Kriya Yogi, you were waiting to be initiated, and being a great believer of Mahavatar Babaji, and then being who you are today, an ardent servant of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, a devotee, an instrument, would you agree with them that there has been a shift in gears? How do you see the journey?
That's why we've always come at Christmas. I would anxiously await Swami's discourse for him to give us a little nugget of Jesus. Like when he said in 1977, Jesus spent five of those lost years in Kashmir, where he realized my father and I are one. That fulfilled me. And when he said, this star that everybody followed comes once every 800 years. So, Jesus coming didn't bring the star. Jesus came when the star was coming anyway. Those fine words and the cross that he manifests for Dr. Hislop, touching it, looking at it with a magnifying glass to see the infinite detail of our Lord Christ, Swami's just fulfilled me in my Christian belief that they were one. And Swami knew all the answers to Christ, all the stories to Christ. And then he produced that little 2x2 booklet.
The Bible, the tiniest little Bible.
Yeah, the tiniest little Bible. These are the things that he gave us when we came Christmas, and we keep coming because he would always have a nugget of wisdom for us.
And what about your tryst with the Yogananda movement, the Self-Realization Fellowship?
It's a wonderful movement. And if Swami had never come, I would still be there. But once in a while, you get an opportunity to be next to the God, the Avatar, and I wouldn't miss that for anything.
Beautifully said.
Tune in to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sai Ram, and welcome back. You're tuned to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 15 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time, that is, and today is the 17th of April, 2014. We hope you enjoyed part one of this Tris with Divinity conversation with Rita and Robert Danielli of the United States. Dear sisters and brothers, your feedback is critical for our self-improvement. We love hearing from you by email, and our email ID is listener@radiosci.org. Next week, you can hear the conclusion of this two-part interview with Robert and Rita Danielli right here on Morning Glory. Same time, same place, same day. And let me assure you that this interview only gets better in part two, so make sure you don't miss it. Before we go any further, perhaps now is a good time to pause and reflect on the current state of this great nation called Bharat or India. Bhagwan Baba has always described Bharat as the spiritual engine of the world. And I guess countries also on their own go through their cycles of karma. And as you must be well aware, India right now is smack in the middle of a national election. And this one is really critical, as growing corruption, terrorism, poverty, crimes against women, environmental degradation and poor infrastructure have mired the lives of 1.2 billion Indians over the past nearly seven decades now. At a time like this, let us all contemplate on what a great Indian seer of the 20th century, a profound philosopher, one of my favorites, Sri Aurobindo Ghosh, had to say about India. Sri Aurobindo said, and I quote him, "India saw from the beginning, and even in her ages of reason and her age of increasing ignorance, she never lost hold of the insight that life cannot be rightly seen in the soul light, cannot be perfectly lived in the soul power of its externalities. India is the meeting place of the religions, and among these, Hinduism is by itself a vast and complex thing, not so much a religion as a great, diversified, and yet subtle, unified mass of spiritual thought, realization and aspiration. India of the ages is not dead, nor has she spoken her last creative word. She lives and has still something to do for herself and the human people. That which we call the Hindu religion is really the eternal religion because it embraces all others." Unquote, Sri Aurobindo. Now, dear sisters and brothers, let's also recall how Swami defined a true Hindu. A true Bharatiya is a Hindu because he or she, according to Baba, believes in Hindu, in the word Hindu, where the letter H stands for humanity, I for individuality, N for nationality, D for divinity, and U for unity. So someone who really respects humanity, honors individuality, is devoted to nationality or national interest, seeing the divinity amongst all and seeing the unity that underlies it, is a true Hindu. With that understanding of who a true Indian or a Hindu is, up next is a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. These are a series of interviews with the former students of Baba's universities and schools, and today under the spotlight is Ms. Lena Birdloy Barua of Assam. But before I play that interview for you, let me remind you that that next Thursday happens to be the Aradhana Day. It will mark the third anniversary of Baba's transition to the formless. Many inspiring initiatives are planned here at Radio Sai to mark this holy day, and I request you to stay tuned to all the information that we will be sharing with you about it throughout the course of today. One among them is from our creative team, of course, that has worked extremely hard to quench your spiritual thirst with some divine music. As I told you last Thursday also, we have recently released Bhavanjali 9 on Ugadi Day, and this CD consists of brand new and original bhajans that have been composed by Brother T.V. Hariharan, and these have been sung by the best singers from Mandir in Prashanthi Nilayam. So right now, I have a divine number for you. It's called Guru Deva, Sai Guru Deva, in the voice of Brother Srinivasalu. Enjoy. Thank you.
Gurudeva, Sai Gurudeva.
Gurudeva, Sai Gurudeva.
Gurudeva, Sai Gurudeva.
Gurudeva, Sai Gurudeva.
Brahma Vishnu Mahadeva. Vishnu Mahadeva. Ananta Rupa Akalanka Charita.
Ananta Rupa Akalanka Charita.
Ananta Rupa अकलंक चरिता
अनंत रूप अकलंक चरिता
आनंददायक देवा
आनंददायक देवा
आनंददायक देवा अखिलांडकोटि ब्रह्मांडनायक अखिलांडकोटि ब्रह्मांडनायक साई Sadgurudeva
Sai Sadgurudeva
Sai Sadgurudeva
Sai Sadgurudeva
Gurudeva Sai Gurudeva Vishnu Mahadeva
Brahma Vishnu Mahadeva
Ananta Rupa Akalanka Charita
Ananta Rupa Akalanka Charita
Anandadayaka Deva अखिलांड कोटि ब्रह्मांड नायक
अखिलांड कोटि ब्रह्मांड नायक
साई सद्गुरुदेवा
साई
सद्गुरुदेवा Gurudeva Sai Gurudeva
That melodious number, Gurudeva, Sai Gurudeva, was sung by Brother Srinivasulu. He is one of the singers in the mandir here. And this number was taken from our latest release, Bhavanjali 9. Now, dear sisters and brothers, I just want to remind you once again that Bhavanjali 9 is the culmination of great talent and technology to bring you the best possible scores best put together by the finest of singers from Prashanthi Nilayam, musicians and audio engineers. And in this connection, I'd like to read a few names to you. The bhajans have been sung and many of you who are big followers of the Mandir Bhajans will recognize these names. by the following singers: Ashwat, I guess that's Ashwat Narayan, Srinivasalu, Ravi Kumar, Kannan, again Ravi Kumar, Ameya, that is Ameya Deshpande, Kostupare, Siddhartha, and Anirudh. And the composition and the lyrics for all these bhajans, these are brand new bhajans, and we are trying to create a new repository of bhajans because we have been singing the same maybe 3,000 bhajans for the last several years. So more bhajans are being created and composed, and this collection for Bhavanjali 9 comes from Brother T.V. Hariharan. Now, Brother T.V. Hariharan has spoken at length about the compositions for Bhavanjali 9 and the experience he had while doing so to my colleague, Brother Chandu Vijay, in his program, Love to Love. So that happened 2 weeks ago. So if you want to hear that interview between Chandu and Brother T.V. Hariharan, I beg your pardon, you can go to our Thursday Live archives and look up Love to Love from 2 weeks ago, from a fortnight ago, and you can hear that interview and really enjoy it. I also want to bring to your attention some of the key players in recording this album. Keyboard and music arrangement is by Radio Sai's very own Brother Anirudh. You know, Brother Anirudh is that creative genius who comes up with all these phone rings and alarms that we put for free downloads on our website. And he's such a talented musician. He knows instruments, he knows vocal, he knows Carnatic, he knows Hindustani, he knows it all. So our Mr. genuinely humble but very talented Anirudh has done the keyboard and music arrangement. The tabla and percussion arrangements, the credits go to Rupak Desai. Sitar, again, a key member of Team Radio Sai, Brother C.G. Sai Prakash. Flute, Pramod Umapati. Veena, our again Radio Sai's very own Sai Prasad. Violin, Hemant. Chorus, Anant. Abhijay Sitoki. Anush Narayan, Harinandan, Vishal, Nikhil Jayaraman, Anirudh, Ashwin Nayak, and Sandeep. And last but not least, the sound engineer is Radio Sai's Dhananjaya Sheth, and he's in charge of all the mixing and mastering. And as I told you last week, DJ's stories are incredible. He's learned the art of audio engineering from none other than the cosmic engineer Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. To learn more about how DJ became such a good audio engineer, you must listen to his Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview by just going to radiosai.org/sai students. And when the list comes up, look for Dhananjaya Sheth. And I promise you, you're going to love that. Now, I also promise you that at the end of this program, I will play a few more numbers from this particular CD for you. But right now, I think it's time for all of us to enjoy part one of our Fleeting Moments conversation with Ms. Lina Berdaloy Barua of Assam. Lina is a former student of the Anantapur College of Babas University. Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, conversations with the graduates of Sai Schools and University. Our guest today is Ms. Lina Berdaloy Barua, who spent 7 years between 1983 and 1989 at the Anantapur campus of the Sai University. Lina Berdaloy Barua joined Baba's Anantapur College in 1983 in the intermediate program, that is the equivalent of grades 11 and 12. She went on to pursue her undergrad at the same campus of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, earning herself a BA degree in 1987. And in 1989, she completed her master's in English. Lina comes from the well-known Berdaloy family of Assam in Northeast India. Her grandfather, a Gandhian and freedom fighter, Bharat Ratna, late Sri Lokapriya Gopinath Berdaloy, was the first chief minister of the state of Assam. Her father, late Brigadier Dhirendranath Berdaloy, served in the Indian Army, and the family came to Swami in 1976. However, Lina's uncles, Sri Biren Chankakoti and Sri Biren Berdaloy, and her grandmother, late Mrs. Surabala Berdaloy, were devotees of Baba from the 1960s. Both of Lina's siblings have studied at the Sai University, and one of them continues to serve the Sai mission as a teacher at Bhagwan's school here in Prashanti Nilayam. It was Lina's uncle, Sri Biren Berdaloy, who originally initiated the Sai mission in Rongya and the surrounding areas, and he later taught at the Sai University for nearly 25 years between 1980 and the year 2004. Several children from Lina's family, including her son, her nieces and nephews, are current students of various Sai schools and the Sai University. Professionally, Lina Birdloy Barua is an associate professor at Rongya College in Rongya, Assam near Guwahati, a town which has a vibrant Sai movement. Sai Ram, Lina, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories on Radio Sai.
Sai Ram.
Lina, your family is one of the early families to come from Northeast India to Baba. So, let's talk about the journey to Sai, the genesis across the family tree. And it involves, I understand, the Birdloy family as well as the Chankakoti family.
Yes. Swami was introduced to the family actually by, as you already mentioned, my uncle Biren Chankakoti, whose daughter continues to serve Swami here, Sevali Chankakoti in the Ishwarambu school, and my uncle Biren Birdloy. It was actually our grandmother who introduced us to Swami's bhajans right from an early period.
How did she know about Swami?
She heard, through my uncle, as I said, Biren Chankakoti, through him. This was in the early 60s when there was a very vibrant Sai movement in Assam at that point of time. It continues even today, I must say. So we were actually posted in the 1970s, early 70s, Granny had come to stay with us in Delhi. And that is where she introduced us to bhajans. We were always a very musically inclined family. And we would all sing together whatever grandfather had taught my father, and we would sit together and sing these bhajans. But yet, Swami had not kind of entered our lives as such, but it was just the music that attracted us. And then it was actually 1972 when we moved to Udhampur.
In Jammu and Kashmir,
yes. This was a little town over there, and we would live in these small little bashas, thatched roofs, and it was actually one house with a wall in between, and our neighbors were Sai devotees. This was Colonel, Mr. and Mrs. Maman Singh, and they would have bhajans in their places every evening. And since we all loved music, so we would also sometimes have it at our house. And then one day, this was in 1972, one day Ma went to her altar, and this was just at the windowsill, we had a little altar over there. And she saw a packet wrapped in newspaper actually, and she couldn't decipher what language it was in. And she opened the packet, and there it was a yellow powder. So she couldn't understand what it is, so she asked Auntie, Maman Singh Auntie, what do you think this is? So she said that, you know, you are blessed because Swami has come to your house. Swami has blessed you here with this. This is haldi, she said.
Turmeric.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very auspicious.
Yes, it's very auspicious. That's what she told us. We didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asked us to mix it with milk and have it as prasad. But then this always bothered us, and what was written in that, what language was it and what was written there? So we thought it could be a South Indian language. So there was one South Indian officer under my father. So my father called him and then he read it and he said, this is Telugu. And we were all dumbstruck, like how did that happen? And he tried to read what was written, and it was the story of the prodigal son.
Oh, in Telugu.
In Telugu.
From some Telugu Bible?
I mean, it was amazing.
Mm.
And then we thought about it, and Auntie told us then that, you know, I think Swami wants you back. Swami is calling you. So that was the first presence of Swami in our house.
Mm. And your father was an army officer.
He was an army officer.
You were all Western educated. How did you, were you able to accept all these propositions which were not based on rationality? They were based more on a leap of faith.
Exactly. No, he didn't. He didn't accept it. My mother and me, I mean the children, we were very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
We as children didn't know. This was something magical happening at home.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we didn't know much. But my father was totally, he took it with a pinch of salt. In fact, actually, I must say this, a number of miracles would happen in uncle's house.
Next door neighbor?
No, Biren Birdloy.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Vibhuti would be, photos would be covered with Vibhuti, Kumkum, honey. And dad would even see that and yet, you know, kind of not believe or chose not to believe at that point of time. In fact, and I'm digressing maybe, but in 19, when I was not even born and parents were posted in Hyderabad, and Swami had come in 1964, if I'm not mistaken, and in Colonel Krishnamurti's house, my father knew them. And then someone came and told father that Swami is coming to stay here. Would you like to go and see him? And my father said, no, I'm not interested in sadhus and babas. So that was another missed opportunity, I think.
Can you imagine? But I guess everything has its own time.
I guess.
So this was in 72, but then it was not until 1976, January of 1976, that we actually went to Swami. Swami called us to him.
How did that happen? How does this call thing happen?
That again, my Rani came in January. Ours was a very typical army family. My father's was much into the army ways.
Mm.
And Rani always wanted us to go the spiritual way, since they had already known what is the Sai movement about. So she came, and literally we had to force our father, the children, like we had to blackmail him and say that take leave and take us to Puttaparthi. He delayed, he wouldn't go, and then the leave was over, and then finally we made him take extra 1 week leave and leave for Puttaparthi.
That's the first time you came to Puttaparthi.
The first time we came.
What was it like?
Oh, I can't describe.
Do you remember? You must have been little.
I was 9 years old, but I remember quite a bit of it, actually.
All the golden sands, open air darshan.
Yes. Brother Rupak Chankakoti, he was there. He took us, actually. Swami had already left. We stayed over as soon as we reached Bangalore. We stayed that night. And meanwhile, Swami left for Puttaparthi, and he told Rupak Bhaiya to take us with him. So we reached Parthi, I think it must have been in the afternoon, I think. And that was our first experience of, let me also die, can I just digress?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
My mother had a dream of Swami on the train, actually. She saw Swami standing in front of a door, large door. She didn't know what it was, a large door. So the first darshan that we had of Swami was Swami standing in front of the interview door over there. And then she said, Mahi, this is exactly what I saw in my dream. So he just looked at us and gave his Abhaya Hasta. And
so her dream came true.
Her dream came
How
true.
Beautiful.
Her dream came true. He just smiled at us and we met again. I mean, when Swami gives, I think he just floods you with his grace. And we were there for, I think, 8 days, and we had 5 interviews. Day and night he would call us, and that kind of transformed our whole lives. I was just 9 years old. There was a lot at home that was, in the sense that typical army that we had. So,
all your lifestyle was gone. Army lifestyle by the window.
Yeah, it did. It did. I really don't know where to start, actually. Let me start with the interview, the first interview. We went inside, and Swami, as soon as he came in, he created a bundi, hot bundi.
Sweet.
Yeah. He created it on my brother's hand. He said, give me your hand. He created it there, and my brother says it was hot when he was holding it. In his cupped palms. Mm. And then he distributed it to all of us. Then I think it was Pongal, if I'm not mistaken. And he sat down, first he sat on the chair, then he came and sat down on the footstool with us.
So casual.
Yeah. He sat and then he said, Tum humko nahi janta hai. You don't know me, but hum tumko janam janam se janta hai.
Oh, but I know you for lifetimes. Many lifetimes.
Many lifetimes. And I have never seen my father like this. I mean, my father's always been a straight, upright, army kind of a person. And there he was like a child.
Just melting. Oh, my God.
And Swami went on patting him. And my brother, he kept patting my brother's cheek, which covered with vibhuti, actually. So this was the first moment with Swami. And me, I was too mesmerized. I mean, I was just 9 years old. This man with the robe and the hair. All I knew is that I wanted to be close to him. I just wanted to sit close to him. And he pulled me and my brother beside him and made us sit by his side. So a number of things happened actually during the course of those days. One thing that I would like to share is that my granny, she was a little strict about her eating, like she would cook herself, and we said that we'll have it in the canteen, but granny said no, she would prefer to cook because they make it with onions. And then that next interview, I think Swami said, Khana kaisa hai? He asked us.
So, how is the food?
How is the food? And we said, yes, Swami, it's wonderful. Then he looked at my granny and he said, Mataji, he used to call her Mataji, bolta hai ke pyaaj nahi khata hai. Nahi, amma, vichar nahi karo. Don't differentiate.
Okay.
Like she wouldn't have food cooked by others.
And also not in the canteen because of the onions used. She was Brahmin, I guess.
She was. So, he said, Vichar nahi karo, amma, sab ek hai. Like, God is there everywhere. So, that is something that changed us.
So, all the taboos were gone. You guys were undergoing serious transformation very quickly.
We were.
He was undoing everything.
He was. The second thing, the most important thing, what happened was that he was, as I said, very loving to my father, more than to any of us. And then I think it was the second day where after the interview, my father went out. Like he was about to go out. And then suddenly a volunteer rushes behind him and says, "Swami's calling you, Swami's calling you." So he came running back, and meanwhile we were staying in W1 at that time. So we also came, like Swami's calling us, we were also called. And then Swami took us to the interview room inside the Purnachandra, the green room. And he made us sit there and he looked at my father and he said, "Kahan gaya tha?
Where did you go?"
"Where did you go?" And I mean, father had actually wanted to just go out and his habits, some of them that we couldn't curb. So he said, "Nay, nay, thoda time mila aur tum bahar gaya." He said that. And then Swami...
You just got a little bit of a reprieve when you stepped out.
He stepped out. Uh-huh. And my father, right there and then, he did a shashtang pranam to Swami. And he said, "Swami, hum aaj se sab kuch chhod dega." And believe it or not, he just left everything. He turned into a vegetarian. He turned into a teetotaler.
Non-smoking.
Non-smoking. And our lives totally changed after that. We were completely
that small incident, huh?
Those few words from Swami.
It can take a person like a whole lifetime in rehab to get over habits like these.
Yes.
And the power of Swami's words.
Yeah.
I think it was the love with which he spoke.
Yes, yes. In fact, he had given father a ring in the previous interview, so he asked for the ring back. So my mother thought that maybe he's going to punish my father now and say that, you know, take the ring back. But he blew at it thrice and it turned into a Navaratna ring and he gave it to him.
So the nine gems for the nine planets.
Yes.
Beautiful.
That was one that totally, completely changed our lives. That was
so that instant. 1 week trip did a lot to the Birdloy family. You went back very sattvic.
Yes, we did. We did. There was one more thing I'd just like to mention in the interview where he asked my brother, "Who is God?" And
he must have been a little boy, your brother.
Yes, he must have been 13, I suppose, mm-hmm. 13. And my brother said, "You are God." And Swami said, "No, each one of you is God, but you need to experience him." So that was something that we had not even heard about, you know, at that point of time.
I know.
And that was the most important lesson that he gave us right there, the first.
That each one of us is God.
Yeah, this was in the first interview. And we are still trying to realize that even today we haven't, I mean, we try to go towards it, but the journey is long, I suppose.
Yes, that was 36 years ago.
That was 36 years ago. And during the course, I don't know, remember whether it was that trip or the others, but Mr. Hislop was called in one interview with us. And
Dr. John Hislop.
Dr. John Hislop. And there again, Swami told him, Swami was so excited. Again, he was on the footstool and told Mr. Hislop, Tell them. I remember that very clearly. And then Dr. Hislop was telling us about a vision that he had of Swami, blue in color.
So and can Swami you just explain that in detail?
When he turned back to Swami, he was sitting in front and Swami was sitting behind. And he turned back. When he turned back, he saw Swami was not sitting there, but a blue figure. Swami had transformed into a different figure altogether. And he was describing the figure to us when my father said, "Oh, that is Krishna." And then Swami confirmed that to Dr. Hislop that yes, that is Krishna.
And that's a beautiful incident that is chronicled in Dr. Hislop's book.
Yes.
And it does refer to an army officer and his family who were seated there.
Yes.
And the army officer shouted, "Oh, that must have been Krishna."
Krishna, yeah. Yes.
So you were that family,
yes,
huh?
Yes, yes.
Little did we know.
That was my father over there.
So do you remember what Dr. Hislop said about the description of Krishna, what he looked like?
He said even he at that point of time probably didn't know that was Krishna. He said that Swami had transformed into a beautiful, that's all I remember. I was just 9 or 10 at that time, but it was beautiful, that's what he said, and blue in color. And I cannot even describe how beautiful it was.
Lovely.
And he created talismans, the first trip, 76 talismans for all of us. And then
what
he,
do you have?
I have a locket now. Thankfully, it's been with me. And yes, he also told grandmother that he would be giving her a shivling. He gave her a shivling later on after Shivratri, he did. And then he told my brother and me that you will come one day to my institutions to study. I mean, he told us.
But your elder sister also studied here?
She did. The strange thing is that at that point of time, she went back and she told my father that thank God he didn't tell me.
Only Lena and the brother got caught. Little did she know she was going to be here for the rest of her life.
Exactly. These are the ways that he works. Yeah. And so this was the beginning. That's how we came.
I see.
So, Deliva, your family was involved in an accident as well?
Yes. In 1983, my father had a terrible accident. Like father and mother, both of them were in a car. A road accident. They were going to leave my aunt. Aunt and uncle were going back from Delhi to Assam. This was early 1983. And at night, actually, suddenly a truck banged into their car and the car was totally mangled. I mean, you wouldn't think that anyone had survived that accident. But
this was in Delhi.
This was in Delhi, 1983. And none of us were there. We were all studying. My brother was studying in Vrindavan. I was in Anantapur. My sister was here in Puttaparthi. And my mother at that point of time, the moment of the accident, she saw a white, bright light. And she saw Swami standing there. And she saw three of us with Swami. And she says that it was such a beautiful feeling. She didn't want to come back. I mean, she just wanted to, as if she was going to become one with Swami. She had that experience. And later on, when they were taken to the hospital, they didn't know how they were taken. People took them in. And they recovered. And Swami sent a letter and he sent Vibhuti through my sister to them. At that point of time, as he was recovering from that, there were some complications. And suddenly, he had to undergo an emergency operation. It was decided that he would. So the previous night, my mother, the whole night, she sat with a glass of Vibhuti water, giving him Vibhuti the whole night. And in the morning around 4 o'clock, she saw an Om had appeared on the glass and she told my father.
With Vibhuti? The Om was formed by what?
There was a Om imprint on the glass.
I see.
This glass was Vibhuti water that she was feeding him. There was an Om
like an engraving?
Like an engraving, sort of, not exactly an imprint kind of thing.
With a finger, somebody wrote with a finger.
Yeah, with a finger. Om.
I see.
And then she told my father that, don't you worry, Swami is here. Swami will take care of us. And sure enough, in the morning when the doctors came for a last consultation, just before taking him to the operation, they said that, no, he doesn't need an operation now. It's fine, he will be able to recover without the operation. And around this time itself, there was an agarbatti that was burning. And that agarbatti, it burnt into the form of an Om.
The ash.
The ash didn't fall. It was there.
Stringing like an Om.
Yes, like an Om. Totally like an Om.
Mm-hmm.
So these were things like, you could feel Swami's presence always, always with us. And especially in your moments of
despair.
Yes, despair where you think that there's nothing.
Yeah.
You don't know, there's nobody. And I think that's the time that he carries you with him.
Totally. Now, if I may ask, Leena, when Swami sent a letter to Delhi for your dad with your sister Nina, what was in the letter? I'm just curious to know.
He said, Bodloy, lots of blessings. Everything will be fine. So everything will... That was in English that he wrote, a three-line letter it was. Everything will be fine. My blessings with you. Sending Vibhuti through your daughter Nina.
Uh-huh.
Swami is there.
How reassuring.
Yeah.
Your family must be treasuring that letter.
Yes, we framed it and it's there in the family altar. It's there.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Especially now, you know.
It has so much of meaning, my God.
Meaning.
Imagine telling your great-grandchildren that God wrote this letter to a family member.
Yeah.
And Nina's name is there. Oh, she's so lucky.
That is for all posterity.
Now you were living in very comfortable army life and your dad was getting posted. And we know once you're part of the Indian Army, wherever you go, you are privileged to get admission into schools and colleges.
Yes.
So what prompted you to come and study in Anantapur? Although Swami had said that to you as a little girl, is that what you wanted to do as well?
Yes, as early as I can remember, I mean, that interaction with Swami right in the beginning, like that love that I can't even describe the love, as I told you in the first interview. So that is what drew us. Like my sister was the first, ironically, and she still continues here. And then my brother joined, and then this was me in 1983. It was just no other way. I mean, in fact, every holiday after 1976, we would be in Puttaparthi. We haven't seen any other place in India. Except Puttaparthi, that is where we would be here. In fact, some of our most beautiful times were during the summer courses. We attended all three of them, 77, 78, 79. And some of the experiences of that time were also... Can I share some
Please
of them?
This is before you became a student.
You were able
to join the summer course as Swami's guest.
Yes, as Swami's guest. One of this shows Swami's boundless love, that how he is the master of the universe and yet he can... take care of the little desires even of a 10-year-old child. So this was during the summer course where I mean, we would get saris during the summer course. So I would be part, since my sister was there, part of the Anantapur group. And since they were students and I was just a little girl, so no, though I had a badge, but I wasn't given a sari. This was 78, I think, 78 summer course. And during the valedictory function, that is a procession, like everybody was dressed in the saris that Swami had given. And because I didn't have one, so I just wore my own, whatever I had. And I was standing there in the procession, in the lines. And Swami came. We were all waiting for Swami, and as soon as Swami would come, the procession would start. Swami crossed all of us, and then suddenly he saw me. And he called me, and he said, "Tumko sari nahi mila? You didn't get a sari?" I said, "No, Swami." And immediately he called one of the volunteers, and he said that, "Right now, get a sari." Gave it to me, and the procession was stopped. Everybody waited until I wore the sari, and I came. And only then Swami saw me, and then the procession started. So, I mean, that Swami could...
You were literally a showstopper. You stopped the procession till you got dressed and came back.
Came back. I mean...
Wow, so thoughtful, huh?
This, I know, I mean, when I think of it sometimes, like...
Such minor detail.
Just an insignificant little girl. I mean, nothing, but how much Swami thinks about each one of us. That is something that has stayed with me.
Everyone who shares their experiences reminds us of this, that of his millions and millions of devotees, he made each one of us feel special.
Special, exactly.
If, you know, as a parent, if you have two children, it's so hard to make both of them feel special equally at all times. There's always a challenge. And this was a mother with a million devotees. And Swami made everybody feel they were the apple of his eye.
I mean, they were guests and they were such big VIPs, VVIPs. And then still he had time for this little girl. I mean, that is something that's touched and stayed with me always. And then, I mean, these are lessons for us to learn in whatever positions one is, that always have time for the other, however small. No one is small or insignificant in Swami's eyes. There's another incident that I would like to share. I mean, there were such beautiful times now when I think back about it. We were staying inside, in 1977, we were staying inside the campus, the Vrindavan campus, and we had to get the food from the canteen. And we had to cross the mandir, the old mandir. And there was Swami on top, and sometimes he would also be down. So every time you crossed, sometimes he would be standing there, you would get a quick padnamaskar. And he used to always call me Pakora. So, kaisa hai Pakora? You know, these kind of...
cute nickname. Which is basically a vegetable fritter. Pakoda is an eatable...
It is an eatable, a stout one.
A podgy one.
So, he would be standing sometimes by the window as I would come. I remember once when he was... Suddenly, I wasn't aware. And then suddenly, Swami is there at the window and he's saying, "Kya pakoda kitna khata hai?" How much you eat? Waha bhi khata hai, tiffin mein bhi bhar ke lata hai. You're eating there as well as getting the food. Or he would say that kitna stylish hai. Ek dress sham ko, ek dress subah.
Oh, so you were changing your clothes and he was observing you were being very stylish.
So those were mundane things, those were jokes that
he
would...
But they always had a deep meaning.
They had a deep meaning. Yeah. They had a deep meaning. Now, after so many years, you realize it and you go into it. I mean, you think about it. Another significant thing that had happened during that time was when my auntie was not well. This was, I think, 78 summer course. My auntie, Mrs. Himlata Chankakoti, she was Sevali's mother. She and my mother, they were sitting in the first row. Swami was giving his discourse. And auntie was not feeling well. Her head was reeling. So my mother was fanning her with whatever. She had a book, I think, fanning her with a book. And Swami noticed this during his discourse. He stopped his discourse, came and got his glass of water to my mother and gave it to her and said, "Give it to Amma." And mother, because this was Swami's glass, so she poured the water into her hand and was trying to give it to her through her cupped hand. And then Swami said, "Nahi, glass se khilao." Give it to her in the glass. And he waited till auntie was feeling better and then only did he continue his discourse. So this was something that kind of really has stayed with us for all this time.
So much grace.
So much grace. And during the same few days later, my granny was not well suddenly. We were staying in the old hostel dorm. They were staying in the old hostel dorm that was right in the basement. Everybody was, you know, they would have their mattresses on the floor and that is where they were staying. And one
day... This was in Vrindavan?
This was in Vrindavan. And Granny, suddenly she felt very sick, so she would go in the car actually. Dr. Patel would take her in the car and Ma and all would go earlier. So when Granny didn't come, Ma and Auntie came back for Granny and they saw that Granny was lying down on the ground and she was feeling very sick. So they were there with her trying to attend her and then suddenly someone said, Swami is coming. And Swami came down to the basement, looked at her and then he blessed her, gave her vibhuti and he said, let her get admitted to the dispensary. And there every day morning and evening he would come and take care of her, give her darshans. And that's the time when we got Swami very closely, me and my mother. In fact, one day, the first day, she was trying to touch Swami's feet. You know, she was in the bed and then she bent down and Swami lifted his feet on the bed and he said, nahi, nahi, Mataji. He lifted his feet on the bed so that she could touch and do the Pad Namaskar properly.
So he called her Mataji. So respectful. Mataji, yes. Is mother and G is a suffix for respect.
Yeah, yeah. Another, I won't say incident, but something during the first, our first visit to Swami. That tells you about Swami's infinite love that he has. We were sitting, as I said, my brother and me were sitting huddled close to him. He would pull both of us and then one day in the course of this, as Swami was sitting in the footstool, my feet was on Swami's robe. And I didn't realize that. Like, we just wanted to be as close as possible. And we just wanted to be close to Swami. And then my granny was frantically gesturing. She was saying something I didn't understand, you know. And then my mother...
Take your feet off the robe.
To take the feet off the robe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami understood. And he pulled my feet closer to him.
Oh.
And he said, nahi, nahi, Mataji, ye prem hai, ye prem hai.
This is just love.
This is love. This is love. So this is something that, I mean, he taught us that love is beyond, I mean, there is no barrier in love.
No formality, nothing.
No formality in love. It's just oneness.
I guess your grandmother was thinking out of reverence.
Yes.
He should be respectful,
yeah,
not to step on the hem,
yeah,
of his robe.
But Swami is beyond that. He's just pure love. That is what he is. Mm-hmm. And these are lessons that Swami has taught us. And
no,
they come
hang-ups.
In flashes, no hang-ups, no hang-ups. I think that is one of the most important lessons one needs to learn with Swami.
Very true. Now, you spent good 7 years in Anandapur from grade 11 and 12, then undergrad and master's.
Yes.
I'm sure you had many, many experiences. What are your fondest memories? And when you look back at your 7 years at Anandapur College, Swami's University, what are your greatest lessons, takeaways from the experience?
I think the first, of course, would be the inner connect, the bond that one shares with Swami. I mean, I came there as a mollycoddle 15-year-old, totally dependent on everybody and anything. And there Swami molded us, taught us through our teachers, Pushpa ma'am, Gemma ma'am. They taught us to be self-reliant, to be independent, to be dutiful to service. That is one very important thing that I learned over there. Without thinking of oneself, the first instinctively to go and serve somebody when you see someone that needs help. We were people from different backgrounds who came and stayed there together, lived like sisters. The adjustments that we learned over there. I mean, there were little things, life lessons, little things that Swami would teach us, like don't talk too much. And now when you read about that you have, or don't talk too much, don't criticize others. When you think, now when you read about like you have 60,000 thoughts a day and then if you try and the first thing is you talk less and then you try to still your mind. These are things that you look back. Now when I read it, I look back and I say, my God, all this was taught by Swami to us. Live in the present, don't think about the past. These were lessons that we learned right there. You would know, I mean...
I remember them too, some of those interviews,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
But Lina, I remember Swami used to frequently speak with you, often referring to you as Pakoda.
Yes.
And he gave you some tips on eating.
Yeah.
Do you remember? No potato, no banana, something
yes,
he said.
Yes,
what was that
yes,
about?
Yes.
He was curbing your carbohydrate intake.
Yeah, I remember. He was telling Gemma ma'am that give the girls bananas. And then he looked at me and said, nay, don't give her, but yeah. she doesn't need
the extra carbohydrate or potatoes or something.
Yeah.
He said it in such jest, it would never offend anyone.
No.
Swami made it so sweet and loving. If someone else came up to me and said, you know, you got a weight problem, you better stop eating this, I probably not take it as nicely as when Swami told us.
I know. I mean, that was sweet. It was like love pouring out through that. It was so beautiful. So that's it. I mean, the inner connect, that's what I tell my children also, that the inner connect with Swami, the bond with Swami, I think that is something so special that every Sai student shares with Swami. I think that's the most precious thing that we carry with us. The fearlessness that comes with it. The Abhaya Hasta, Swami, you shut your eyes and the Abhaya Hasta tells you that there's nothing to fear at all. Whenever you're in a dilemma and you say, Swami, help me, what would you expect me to do at that point of time? And then you get your answer. And then finally the surrender, like, I'm not the doer. I mean, I've realized that the times when I've struggled the most is when I've always felt that I'm the doer. I need to do this. I need to get there. But the moment that I say that, Swami, it's in your hands. The moment I say that, and then it just happens. I don't know. It just comes through.
It just falls into place.
It falls into place.
And it seems so tough till then it becomes so easy the moment you ask Swami to intervene.
Yeah, when you just let go and surrender.
I can relate to that completely.
Yeah.
Sairam, dear listeners, thank you for staying with us on Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 1 minute past 11 a.m. You just heard part one of our Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Ms. Lina Birdloy Barua. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Next week, you can catch the conclusion of this two-part conversation right here on Morning Glory, same time, same day, same place. Meanwhile, we are really looking forward to your feedback by email to this interview. Please go ahead and fire that email to us at listener@radiosai.org. And now it's time for me to treat you to some brand new bhajans from our recently released album, Bhavanjali 9. And this time around, I'm going to play a bhajan in the voice of Brother Siddhartha. It is titled, Mere Sai Ram Hai.
Allah, Allah, Allah ki masjid bhi dekhi, Isa ka girja bhi dekha, man mandir mein देखा तो प्रकट हुए साई राम मेरे साई श्याम है
मेरे साई राम है मेरे साई श्याम है
मेरे साई राम है मेरे साई श्याम है
मेरे साई राम है मेरे साई श्याम है
ईसाई तुम बुद्ध तुम सत्य साई नाम है
ईसाई तुम
साई तुम बुद्ध तुम सत्य साई नाम है
साई तुम बुद्ध तुम सत्य साई नाम है
मेरे साई राम है मेरे साई श्याम है
मेरे साई राम है मेरे साई श्याम है
अल्लाह साई नाम है मौला साई नाम है
अल्लाह साई नाम है
मौला
साई नाम है
नाम रूप अनेक है सत्य साई एक है
Sai Ram, you're listening to Mere Sai Ram Hai by Brother Siddhartha from our album Bhavanjali 9.
Mere Sai Ram
श्याम है।
Dear sisters and brothers, talking of music as a tribute to a master, I am very happy to inform you that a mega musical concert is coming up in Mumbai. The Sri Satyasai organization of the states of Maharashtra and Goa is going to be celebrating the Aradhana Day on Sunday, that is April the 27th, with a musical extravaganza in the form of a concert titled Tribute to the Legend of Pure Love. And this is going to see some of the biggest names in music, in Indian music industry, offer their love to Bhagwan. These include Sri Anoop Jalota, Sri Pankaj Das, Miss Kavita Krishnamurti, Miss Padmaja Joglekar, Miss Richa Sharma, Sri Gaurav Chopra, Sri Sumit Tapu, and the Bal Vikas children. This musical tribute is going to be held at the Vallabhbhai Patel Stadium, NSCI, Worli, Mumbai, and it will begin at 6 p.m. on Sunday, April 27th. Eminent personalities from all over the world have been invited to witness this one-of-a-kind event. And since the venue can only seat 6,000 people, entry is obviously restricted by invitation. However, you need not worry on that account, because as RadioSci subscribers, you will have the ringside seat to this unique event, as we hope with Bhagwan's grace to air it live on RadioSci.org. Now, with that, it's time for me to sign off. I'm over my time, but Brother Raghu is in a very generous mood, so he's given me his consent to play two more bhajans that I really want to share with you from Bhavanjali 9. I'll tell you the titles. The first one that I will play after I sign off is Shambhu Shiva Shiva Shankar. This one has been sung by Brother Kannan. Following that is the bhajan Jai Pandarinatha Panduranga in the voice of Anirudh from Radio Sai. So till we meet next Thursday, Sai Ram, and thank you very much for your company on Morning Glory. And please enjoy two more bhajans from our album, Bhavanjali 9. First one, in the voice of Kannan. Second, in the voice of Anirudh.
Sundara
Shambho Shiva Shiva Sundara
Shambho Shiva Shiva Sundara
Shambho Shiva Shiva Sundara
Kailasvasa Shankara
Kailasvasa
Kailasvasa Shankara
Kailasvasa Shankara
Parameshwara Paratpara
Parameshwara Paratpara
Parameshwara
Karuna kara
he maheshwara
Karuna
ಶಿವ ಶಿವಸುಂದರ
ಶಂಭೋ ಶಿವ ಶಿವಸುಂದರ
ಕೈಲಾಸವಾಸ ಶಂಕರ
ಕೈಲಾಸವಾಸ ಶಂಕರ
ಪರಮೇಶ್ವರ ಪರಾತ್ಪರ
ಪರಮೇಶ್ವರ ಪರಾತ್ಪರ
ಪ್ರಳಯಂಕರ ಹೇ ಮಹೇಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಸುಂದರ ಕರುಣಾ ಕರ ಹೇ ಮಹೇಶ್ವರ
ಕರುಣಾ
ಕರ ಹೇ ಮಹೇಶ್ವರ ಶಂಭೋ ಶಿವ ಶಿವಸುಂದರ
ಪುರವಾಸ
Jayaparthi Puri Vasa.
Jayaparthi Puri Vasa.
Jaya Pandhari Natha Panduranga Kundalika Varada.
Jaya Pandhari Natha Panduranga Kundalika Varada.
Jayaparthi Purisha Pavana Nama Prashanti Saisha.
Jayaparthi Purisha Pavana Nama Prashanti.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.